I am Planta on the line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Robert Wiertzma joins me again. His new book, a sort of memoir and a sort of biography and criticism of Bruce Springsteen's music, is called Walk Like a Man, Coming of Age with the Music of Bruce Springsteen. It's a great book, a beautiful, thoughtful book about growing up and growing older. I'm not a Springsteen fan. I have Born to Run on my iPod, but that's about it. Sinatra, another singer from New Jersey, is more prevalent on my iPod. But Mr. Wiertzma writes with such affection, care, and honesty about his own life, as seen with Springsteen's music as an underscore. You can't help but appreciate Springsteen as an artist, cultural icon, celebrity, and the person who illuminates Wiertzma's life for both the writer and the reader just a little bit more. Robert J. Wiertzma is an independent bookseller in Victoria and a prolific critic and book reviewer. He's written two best-selling novels, Before I Wake and Bedtime Story, and was last on to talk about his novella, The World More Full of Weeping. His website is at robertjwiertzma.com. The book is published by Greystone. Please welcome back to the Planta Online program, Rob Wiertzma. Good morning, Mr. Wiertzma.
Hey, Joseph. Good to talk to you again.
Thanks for joining us. So how did this book come about? I understand that I actually saw this online, and I read it on your blog, on your website, the introduction you gave Ian Brown. Is that how the book came about?
I was invited by the British Columbia Foundation to introduce Ian Brown and his book, The Boy in the Moon, when it was shortlisted for the British Columbia Prize for Canadian Nonfiction. And as part of that introduction, I talked about how there was one line from a Springsteen monologue that kept going through my head as I was reading Ian's book. And Ian's book is about being a parent to a handicapped child. And the line was about parenthood, about how when you become a parent, to paraphrase, there's no bullet you wouldn't take, no train you wouldn't lie down in front of for your child, and how that's a life sentence. So I mentioned this line, and I gave a little context about following Springsteen on tour through the Pacific Northwest. And at the end of the lunch, I was approached by Rob Sanders of Greystone, who shook my hand quite heartily, and by way of a greeting said, "So, do you want to write a Bruce Springsteen book for us?" And it took me about a tenth of a second to say yes. And then it took me about 4 months to figure out what the book was actually going to be.
The book, you describe the book as sort of liner notes for a mixtape. So you've picked 14 Springsteen songs. These songs... Are they well-known Springsteen songs? How would you describe them?
Well, it was an interesting process because I wanted to... Springsteen is one of the most written about figures of the rock age. So I realized eventually that I was going to have to bring it back to the personal. And the idea of a mixtape came to me because, you know, I grew up in the mixtape age. I've made more mixtapes in my life than I'm really comfortable admitting. Mm-hmm. And it seemed that it would be a good approach, that it would speak to me personally and speak to the material really well. So I took the online list of Springsteen songs, the complete canon at brucespringsteen.net, and started chucking things out. And I ended up with probably 100 songs that I could imagine writing about. And then I had to start making some difficult decisions. And it wasn't enough for me to like a song. Like, that didn't get the song included in the book or on the mixtape. A lot of my favorite songs actually aren't here, whereas there are songs like My Hometown, which I'm not particularly fond of as a song, but it resonates for me personally. It's a song about growing up in a small town, and I can relate directly to it. I can see my life through the lens of that song. And so I came up with about 20 songs that I could write about in that context, using the songs as a lens for my life, using my life as a lens for the songs, and then I cut it down to the 14 that are present, leaving me 6 B-sides.
Is there a way to explain Springsteen's music to, say, someone who's not familiar with Bruce Springsteen?
Well, I'd be really interested in meeting someone who has no familiarity with Bruce Springsteen.
Yeah.
But what appeals to me about Springsteen, what I think appeals to a lot of people, is there is a sense of candor and of trustworthiness to the music. There's a sincerity there that's in fairly short supply these days. There's very little irony to Springsteen's music. He's sincere almost to a fault, and that's been both the great blessing and the great curse of his career.
You first encountered Springsteen watching him on TV, is that right?
Yeah, it was the spring of 1984, just before the Born in the USA album came out, and MTV was running very heavily. This was before Springsteen did videos. He had done a clip for Atlantic City, but what MTV was running in high rotation was a performance clip of Rosalita from 1978. And the first time I saw it, it was my head exploded. It was so pure and so passionate and so sincere. It just destroyed me. Because I was a kid from a small town, and I dreamed about getting out, and I dreamed about getting out as a writer, as someone in the creative arts. And to see someone making their way in the world honestly and passionately, doing what they loved in the arts, was a big deal for me. And it's just such a great song. It's so triumphant and so positive, and the performance is so intense. It changed me forever. I was a convert.
You're describing a song here, and I went to YouTube and watched some of, you know, or listened to some of these songs. Mm-hmm. But isn't it hard to write about music? Did you find that?
Definitely. It's being a writer, one is always confronted with the idea of one's reach exceeding one's grasp. What you're writing is never as good on the page as it is in your head. There's always a line there that you can't cross. Writing about music is even worse, because no matter how you describe it, and in what terms, if I had the knowledge, I could have written musical theory notes on these songs, but that wouldn't capture the song. Describing the song doesn't capture it. There's always a gap between the description and what you're trying to describe, and especially with music. So again, I come back to the personal, to the entirely subjective, rather than pretending that I'm going to be able to capture these songs through my words.
And then going back to your life, going back to, we've talked about this before, about growing up in Agassiz and having to leave it, or wanting to leave it. You write about high school and that experience, being a misfit, a loner. Going back to writing about that in this book, was that painful at all?
It was incredibly painful. Writing this book was a fairly, I mean, it was an illuminating experience, but it was also a fairly painful experience throughout. And it was because I've spent, you know, I'm 40 years old now. I've spent almost 25 years running from my past, and definitely trying not to look at parts of it. I mean, I was a bullied kid. I was a wreck, and I was driven to the point of serious suicidal thoughts, and also channeling my anger and my hopelessness into these incredibly violent stories that I was writing. And I hadn't thought about those years since I got through them. You know, we all have things in our past that we just push down, that we don't want to deal with. And almost without knowing it, I found myself in a position where I was having to confront those things and having to depict them so somebody else would be able to understand them. And I think it's too early to tell whether it was therapeutic or not.
Yeah.
But we shall see.
Your wife and son, are they Springsteen fans?
No.
Did they understand the obsession, though? It's not an obsession, is it?
Well, I mean, I think some people would define it as an obsession. The hundreds of bootlegs, to traveling around to follow Springsteen. I mean, those things are fairly obsessive. It's not a guiding obsession. I don't live and die by it. He's not the only music I listen to. But yeah, I mean, I would say it's rightly characterized as somewhat obsessive. My son really understands it. Xander is 12 years old now, and he's a video game kid. So he is part of this online multiplayer game called Minecraft, and he gets swept up in it. His conversations are so often about Minecraft. I recognize that obsessiveness, and he doesn't have the fondness for Springsteen, and he actually, you know, makes a point of sort of teasing me about it. But
yeah.
I'm able to come back and say, you know, tease him a bit about the Minecraft. So he does understand the obsessive, the nature of obsession, the nature of passion.
How many times have you seen Springsteen live?
I was trying to figure that out. 12, 15, somewhere in there.
Yeah. Chris Christie, the governor of New Jersey, is a huge Springsteen fan.
Mm-hmm.
And he's on Imus a lot, and I listen to Don Imus. And Imus asked him one time, you know, he's seen Springsteen probably 40, 50 times.
Yeah.
After one time, you'd think that you got it out of the system, maybe two times, maybe.
Nah.
But no, you don't? But
no.
You describe in the book, and it's just so great to read, about seeing Springsteen live, and you've seen him, I guess, up close, haven't you?
Yeah, of the shows that I've seen in the last, 10 years, the majority of them have been from the very front row, leaning against the stage, elbows against the stage.
And your wife asked you if he sweated on you?
Yeah, that was after the first time. My buddy and I went down to Portland during the Rising tour, and yes, I got sweated on.
Yeah, and so what's it like being up close and seeing someone that you've listened to all these years perform?
Well, it was a couple of things. On the one hand, and we're going to run out of hands here, but on the one hand, it was the fulfillment of a childhood dream. Oh my God, I'm in the front row for a Springsteen show. And it was I don't want to call it a religious experience, but it was a...
Close to one,
right? It was a church-like experience. It had the same... It had a congregational feel. And Springsteen, a lapsed Catholic, I think is probably quite aware of that, because there are actions. There's a call and response between Springsteen and the crowd at a very sort of primal level, and it's as practiced as the rituals in the Catholic Church. You know, it's the only thing I can compare it to. There are arm movements. There are body movements. There are genuflections. What else was interesting was that I hadn't realized how much a part of the band he was, especially seeing those early shows on the Rising tour when the band was bringing out and performing for the first time an album's worth of material. He leads the band. It's an intense, fully involved process every night. Like, there's no... Chuck Berry, for example, will come to town, and he travels with just his guitar, and he pays a pickup band in every community that he plays in. This isn't that. It's not Bruce Springsteen and a backup band. He's an integral part, an organic part of this group of musicians. And watching him lead them through the songs as they were finding their way and honing things and seeing differences between nights was pretty amazing for me.
Is there anyone in your life, in terms of writing, in terms of authors, say, that's affected your life as much as Springsteen?
Wow, that's a good question.
I asked the question because I'm reading the book, and I'm thinking to myself, you've written this book to understand your life.
Yeah.
I don't know if you sought out to do that, but you certainly...
That's what ended up happening.
Yeah, that's what happened, yeah. And so I'm wondering, is there someone who's affected your writing life? From someone you've read, say.
Not in the same way. And that's... I think there are two reasons for that, as I think about it. The first is that writing primarily is cerebral for me. And I process music in a very emotional and at times very physical way. But the act of reading, it's processed through through different parts of the brain, so it doesn't have the same sort of intense visceral response that music does for me. And at the same time, I think writing, the influences on my writing and on my life as a writer are influences, are directed influences. If I'm influenced by a writer, it's toward my own writing, whereas with music, it is simply in and of itself. I'm not trying to build on it. I'm not seeking guidance for my own work from it. If I was a musician, it would be different. That being said, someone like Neil Gaiman, who created the Sandman comic and who's gone on to become a great speculative fiction novelist, has been a huge influence just in terms of being able to create a career as a writer doing what you want to do, what you're passionate about. And he works in a lot of different forms, and he takes a lot of different approaches, and he takes a lot of risks. And I find myself inspired by that.
See, I think of you as a writer, I've never read your novels, the two novels that I mentioned off the top. I haven't read those. But I've read the novella.
Mm-hmm.
I've read this, and I read your reviews regularly. And so when I think of you as a writer, I think of you as, I guess, are you two different sorts of writers? I mean, is the critic different than, say, the creator?
I think so. I think they're both driven by the same engine, and they work sort of ascribing to the same terms, which is accessibility and emotional effect and narrative storytelling. Those are things that I find important as a critic, and that I look for when I'm reviewing, and they're things that I place primary importance on in my own writing. That being said, the critical work and the creative work come from completely different places, and it comes down to the physicality of it. We talked about fountain pens the last time I was on.
Yeah.
The fiction gets written longhand with fountain pens in notebooks. I mean, that's how it happens, and I need that physical unity from my brain all the way down to the ends of my fingers and onto the page. The critical stuff, I can't write longhand. It gets typed in. It's a completely different part of the brain. It's a completely different process.
Well, one of the things that our friend Sean Cranberry and I have talked about your writing, especially about the reviews and the critical stuff, is that you care a great deal about the books that you're reviewing, whether you like them or not. And so that's really why I asked about who inspired you as a writer. Because in this book, we get a sense of you caring a great deal about your life, about your wife, about your son, about your family, about growing up and the sort. But you get that from Springsteen. Did you understand life a little bit better because of Springsteen's music, do you think?
Well, it certainly framed life differently for me. And that, I think, sort of fundamentally goes to what I was trying to do with the book. One of the things that I got out of Springsteen's work, and this actually extends to my reading as well, and it was key, absolutely key to the writing of this book, is that people's stories matter. The characters in Springsteen's music aren't larger than life, by and large. These are just ordinary people struggling from the day to day, and things happen to them that happen to all of us. Marriages fail, and children die, and there are car accidents, and there are work problems, and there are social problems. But the whole thing is that ordinary people matter, and ordinary people's stories are of value. And that was fundamental for me, and you can see that in my work. Like, all of my stuff, despite how fantastic it gets, is very rooted in the domestic, very rooted in quotidian concerns. Everybody has a job, and it's important to me that people have jobs. I can't imagine characters in my books not having jobs. You know, it's a little thing, but these are ordinary people. And when I was writing this book, when I was planning it, I realized that everyone has songs. even if you're not a music fan, there will be a song or two that you hear and it takes you back to a place or brings a memory up in your mind. And you'll have a story that goes with it, that's triggered by that song somehow. And those stories are important. The stories of ordinary people, I mean, I'm nothing special. I mean, I write books, I write reviews, it's just what I do. Stories are important. People's stories are important. Everyone's stories are important. And that's what I got from Springsteen.
And looking back at your life, as you have in this book, has the life changed a great deal? I mean, have you changed your outlook, I should say, about life? I mean, do you look back, perhaps, even at the painful parts of your life, perhaps more fondly at them?
No, I wouldn't say that. I think I've come to a sense of peace with the more painful aspects of it. I think that was one of the results of the book. Yeah, I can't say that my perspective has changed, but the response to that perspective has changed. I have a lot less anger at some of the things in my youth. I recognize what happened, and I do not forget, and I do not forgive, but I'm not angry about it anymore. It's not seething deep inside me. I think having put it on the page, it's outside of me now. It's a story.
If you had a half an hour with Bruce Springsteen, what would you say? What would you do?
Oh, I think I'd want to kick back with a beer and ask him what's coming next. And frankly, I'd want to ask him what he thought of the book.
Yeah. The reviewer in the Toronto Star says that he wishes you talked about your life more, and having known you a bit through Facebook and Twitter, it's been such a delight to read about your past in the book, and I guess I'm much the same, that I'd like to read more about you. Is that something that you're thinking of doing?
Well, the interesting thing about the book is that it ends ultimately in 2005. Which sort of predates social media, it predates the books coming out, it predates some changes in my personal life. It tells that story. And I'm certainly not prepared to write something at book length about sort of bringing it up to the present. I don't know what's going to happen in the future. A year and a half ago, I wasn't planning on writing this book, so things happen pretty fast. I'm certainly open to writing something autobiographical again, but not anytime soon.
And there are sort of autobiographical pieces or what do you call that, sort of inspirations that go into your novels, right?
I will deny that to my dying day.
The HarperCollins, you've signed with them. Is that a novel that you're working on?
It is. It's a novel which called Black Feathers, which I'm working on for them. I think that we're going to publish it in 2013.
This is such a great book, Rob. I've really enjoyed reading it. Congratulations on it, and I hope it does well.
Thanks very much, Joe.
You're very welcome. The website, robertjweersma.com. The book is called Walk Like a Man, Coming of Age with the Music of Bruce Springsteen. It's published by Greystone. Its author, Robert Wiersma, on the line from Victoria in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plata.